It's the last week of February, and you didn't think I forgot about women's heart health, did you? February, of course, is not only the month of love and the heart, but also the women's heart and heart health. Perhaps you didn't know that the number one cause of death in women in the US is heart disease. It's true, not breast cancer, but cardiovascular disease. But as always, there is good news here because heart disease in women is very preventable, or at least the risk factors can be managed and mitigated by the way we live our lives. Welcome back to Health Bite. I'm your host, Dr. Adrienne Udim. I'm a triple board certified internist, obesity medicine, and physician nutrition specialist, and I help people redefine nutrition to include not only the food that we eat, but all the ways we can nourish ourselves physically, mentally, and emotionally. So here are some statistics. Cardiovascular disease accounted for 22% of all causes of death in women in 2015, between the ages of 45 and 64. One in nine women will develop symptoms of cardiovascular disease. After age 65, that ratio climbs to one in three women, according to statistics from the National Center for Health Statistics. There are many reasons why this information is not known. For one, the majority of studies on heart disease has been done in men. And until very recently, that information that we gleaned from men was lumped onto women. But we now know that the woman's heart acts differently than it does in men. For example, while women's heart attack can present with that typical chest pain, usually described as crushing, pressure, squeezing, or tightness, normally on the left side, radiating to the neck or jaw, you've all heard of that, I'm sure. Women, however, are much more likely to present without chest pain when they're having a heart attack. In fact, in one study, nearly 20% of women had no chest pain at all. Some of the other symptoms described by women include just mere discomfort in the upper back or in the neck, heartburn or indigestion, nausea or vomiting, extreme fatigue, dizziness, and shortness of breath. Others will report feelings of fluttering in the chest that are in fact palpitations, or as I mentioned, significant fatigue or shortness of breath. Others will just present with swelling in the feet, the ankles, the legs, even the abdomen. Now, if these symptoms are new or abrupt, the recommendation is to call for 911 ASAP. Women are not only different in the way that they present, but they're also different when it comes to risk factors. There are the common risk factors that are seen in both sexes. These are things like high cholesterol, specifically high LDL or low density lipoprotein. This is the more harmful cholesterol in the blood. Smoking, diabetes, excess weight, physical inactivity, an unhealthy diet, too much alcohol, stress, and depression. These are all risk factors for all of us. But there are also many women-specific risk factors. For example, starting your menses early, having a first period before the age of 11, or early menopause, which is defined as going into menopause, which is the absence of periods for 12 months before the age of 40. Other things like polycystic ovarian syndrome, diabetes during pregnancy, also known as gestational diabetes, preterm delivery, delivery of a child that is low in birth weight or high in birth weight, hypertensive disorders of pregnancy, as well as the presence of chronic and inflammatory diseases like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and other autoimmune disease increases our risk of heart disease. We know that women who have some or many of the above are at a higher lifetime risk for heart disease overall. You can use risk calculators that are found online to determine your lifetime risk. However, they often don't include these female-specific variables, in which case I recommend speaking to your physician or perhaps even a cardiologist or even a women's heart health specialist. They can help you review your risk factors, and together you can decide how aggressive you need to be in terms of additional testing, as well as managing your risk. In terms of testing, here's another shocker. The classic ways that we test for heart disease in men do not necessarily apply to women. For example, the treadmill exercise stress test, it has a higher false positive rate in women, which means more women will appear to have heart disease on this test, as is true in their reality. Also, tests like troponin, which is a blood marker that is diagnostic of an acute cardiac event, it's a blood test that we measure in the emergency room when people are presenting with chest pain and have a risk or the symptoms of having a heart attack. Well, this troponin can be normal in women despite having an acute heart attack, while this is commonly less the case in men. And in some cases, diagnostic tests do not pick up atherosclerotic disease or risk for having a heart attack because the mechanism of heart disease is different in men than in women. For example, the classic understanding of heart disease and heart attack is a formation of a plaque, a ball of cholesterol, if you will, that is found in the lining of the arteries that narrows the vessel over time, preventing blood flow to the heart and causing heart attack. Or more acutely, what's called a plaque rupture. So that little ball of cholesterol and inflammatory stuff can rupture suddenly. It can break open. And the response to that plaque results in a cascade of other proteins that come into the area and block the passage of blood flow. This narrowing or obstruction can be easily seen on coronary angiography. This is a study in which dye is injected into the large arteries, and it's viewed as it's passed through the arteries that feed the heart. Now, while women can have this kind of heart disease, of course, women have a higher percentage of what's called MINOCA, or myocardial infarction with non-obstructive coronary artery disease. This can be caused by a whole host of things like spasm in the arteries or other processes that don't get picked up by a classic angiogram because that classic obstruction is just not present. Now, this conversation can get seriously scientific and into the weeds, and I don't want to do that. But I do want to share that these differences can exist and are not super well known in the general medical community. So if you are having chest pain or some of the other non-specific symptoms I described, like shortness of breath or reduction in exercise tolerance or the ability to do the kinds of exercise or movement like climbing the stairs that you used to do, you may need to be your own health advocate if these usual tests are not helping make a diagnosis. Okay, so now back to the regular gal, the one that hasn't had a heart attack, but perhaps has some risk factors and wants to reduce her risk. Here are some ways you can manage that risk. And these are not limited to females, by the way. We can all benefit from this. Number one, diabetes. People with diabetes are at far greater risk for developing heart disease and heart attack than those that are without. Diabetes is more common in people with a family history or in those who are overweight or have a diagnosis of obesity. Basically, diabetes is our body's inability to compensate for the sugar that we eat. And this puts us at risk. There are ways to screen for diabetes, including very easy blood tests, including a fasting blood sugar, an oral glucose tolerance test in which you drink a sugary drink and have your blood tested at intervals after the drink, as well as a marker called the hemoglobin A1C. This is basically measuring the sugar molecules that stick to your blood cells. And given that our red blood cells have a lifespan of about 3 months before they get recycled and replaced, a hemoglobin A1C is a little bit more potent of a diagnostic test because it tells us what our sugar levels are like over the last 3 months, as opposed to a fasting blood glucose, which only tells you what your sugar is in that moment on that fasting blood test. Okay, another risk factor is hypertension or elevated blood pressure. Classically, hypertension is a number that is above 140 over 90. So 140 is the systolic blood pressure, 90 is called your diastolic blood pressure, and a BP of 140 over 90 at several intervals is diagnostic. These days, the criteria for reduction of blood pressure, though, is much lower than what we believe to be in the past. And we pick up people who have pre-hypertension, that range that is not quite diagnostic for hypertension. It may be reasonable to push that blood pressure further down, that is, in people who have risk factors for heart disease. Cholesterol, we talked about it. You can get a fasting lipid panel, which will give you a few numbers. Your total cholesterol, which ideally should be under 200, your LDL, remember that's the bad cholesterol, remember L for lower. A perfect LDL is under 100. Now, not everyone needs an LDL that low, but if you have certain risk factors like diabetes, for example, that aggressive cholesterol and LDL reduction is necessary. For others who don't have risk factors and who are young in age, we tolerate an LDL as high as 190. Smoking, that's an obvious one. If you're a smoker, quit. Your diet matters. Diet independent of weight loss. And I've talked about this so much on this podcast. Food is more than the numbers on the scale. And even if you're overweight, the type of diet that you consume matters. Study after study after study has shown that a Mediterranean-style diet is the most effective in preventing the onset of heart disease. It's also preventive in the recurrence of heart disease or heart attack. So if someone has already suffered a heart attack, following a Mediterranean-style diet can prevent the onset of a second heart attack. So much so that a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine many years ago was stopped early because the diet arm, the Mediterranean diet arm, people who were enrolled in that part of the study had such a great benefit in risk reduction as compared to the control diet, the typical Western high saturated fat diet, that this study was deemed to be unethical and was actually stopped early. That's really unheard of. We usually don't stop studies because it prevents us from getting the whole picture, unless for some reason we believe it's unethical to continue. And this is one of the few studies in which a healthy diet was deemed so superior that it was unethical to allow the control group, namely the Western diet group, to continue eating as they were. Another form of the Mediterranean diet is one called DASH. It's published by the American Heart Association, and DASH stands for Dietary Approach to Stop Hypertension. Now, basically, these diets have certain things in common. They have a high intake of carbs. Yes, carbs, but not the carbs that you may think of. We're not talking about processed carbs, the yummy, highly palatable stuff that we consume in the West, but foods like grains, beans, legumes, whole grain carbohydrates, including breads and cereals. These actually form the backbone of the Mediterranean and the DASH diet. There is some intake of animal protein, like lean meats such as chicken, poultry, and fish. Red meat is really kept to a minimum. like once or twice per month. And there is a large amount of plant-based proteins, as well as plants in general. Lots of fruits and vegetables, and lots of high quality, high fiber carbohydrates. This DASH diet also limits alcohol. So when we think about the Mediterranean style diet, we often think about the French on their lanai drinking a glass of wine. But keep in mind, the alcohol is actually quite small. Smoking, diet, cholesterol. Next is movement and exercise. And again, the benefits of exercise are far beyond what we can achieve in terms of weight loss. Individuals who exercise or move their bodies regularly reduce the risk of heart disease, even if they don't lose an ounce. So this is an easy one, people. This is an easy way to start mitigating your risk of heart disease, as well as the risk of so many other diseases like dementia and Alzheimer's, depression and anxiety, even certain cancers. Moving on to sleep. Sleep is actually essential to preventing cardiovascular risk. In fact, sleep apnea, which is an organic problem that causes individuals to pause during their sleep, thereby dropping their oxygen level, is an independent risk factor for hypertension, heart disease, and stroke. So it's important to screen for sleep apnea if you have symptoms of snoring, awakenings during sleep, pauses in your sleep. Your partner or your kids may tell you if they hear you doing that. Another really good sign is choking or gasping for air. That means that you've likely suffered an apneic episode, a moment in which your breathing has stopped and your oxygenation has dropped. Stress. Stress is a big one. Managing your stress is an important way to help prevent heart disease. We've also talked a lot on this podcast about mind-body strategies that help us with emotional regulation and help us manage our stress. But here are some tips. Managing stress can be done with mind-body practices like breathing, meditation, hanging out in nature. Merely the sights and smells of nature can help regulate our nervous system, bring down our blood pressure, and mitigate stress. Other ways are through increasing connection. You may have heard in recent podcasts, I've done several on connection in general, on Vivek Murthy, our Surgeon General's report and mission to help with loneliness in the United States, and some easy evidence-based ways to increase connection. And I don't just mean through romantic partnerships, platonic partnerships, spending time with friends, and even creating connection with people at the supermarket or your favorite barista. There are so many others, but this is a really good place to start. So on this February, in honor of Women's Heart Health, I want you to take care of your heart. Some of you might be thinking, well, I'm young and heart disease is a problem of the elderly. That is just not so. More importantly, some of the risk factors that develop when we are younger can be managed and modified to prevent the risk of heart disease when we are older. So this is all about prevention. And I want to end with this. Heart health is very feasible for women, and heart disease is by and large very preventable. The beauty is, what's good for the heart is also good for your spirit and for your soul. I hope this knowing will encourage you to engage in your own heart health and adopt some of the guidance I've provided you, which undoubtedly will benefit you, mind, body, and soul. Hey, if this was a helpful podcast, and or if you know of anyone who would benefit from this information, please, please share. This kind of information is critical to helping us change those statistics and make this preventable disease of heart disease less common in our men and women. I enjoyed spending this episode with you, and I look forward to seeing you here next week on Health Bite. Until then, I hope you have a lovely, heart-healthy week. Bye now.